Welcome to the Ortho Joke Podcast, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. Join hosts Mohit Bhandari and Mark Swankowski as they discuss current topics and publications in the world of orthopedics and beyond.
Well, good morning, Mark. How are you? I hope you're well rested from our travels from Istanbul. And it's great to see you with the JBJS shirt on. You're wearing the brand. I love it.
Flying the flag. But I've got to get one that has the new tagline. JBJS.
Think JBJS. I know it does really well for us. So, but you know, you and I have been chatting a lot, and you know, we just attended a meeting where so much of it was about where we're going and trying to figure out future strategies and trying to understand evidence. And we couldn't have a better guest to help us think about those exact same issues. If I could, maybe I'll just introduce him. So Professor Rudolf Puhlmann is an orthopedic surgeon and working currently at in the orthopedic department at Leiden University. And he's also a dean recently at the university-affiliated group called OLVG. Rudolf, I mean, we've known each other for decades now, and you're always up to new things. And so my opening line to you would be, what's new and what's happening right now in your life?
Yeah, what's new? So I just took on this role as a dean, and it's more like a helicopter role. So I was a chair of the department, and the Department of Orthopedics, and I was the director of joint research, so the research unit we started, and now to get the plans we're working on actually into the hospital and actually working on, I took this new role as a dean. So I'm supervising all the research, so not only orthopedic research, but also all the teaching, medical teaching, also nurses teaching, so and affiliated healthcare folks. So it's a very broad role. So I'm more on the strategic side now and more working closely with the board of directors and trying to head the right direction. So that's on my mind right now.
Well, you're clearly one of the more recognizable names in the region, certainly in Amsterdam and most certainly in the Netherlands area. Around the, you know, the word evidence-based medicine, your name comes up always, and I've seen tons and tons of your students, your graduate students, your mentees all over the world. How have you adapted the same principles of evidence-based medicine to testing maybe some of the strategic things that you might be thinking of doing? You know, when we think about moving from evidence to action, we always think about core research projects. I know you've done lots of those. Yeah, but what about on the leadership side? What about for all the, you know, surgeons and administrators in our network who are listening, who want to think about applying the same rules?
So we're used to the word evidence-based medicine, but I think we should head forward to evidence-based management. And so it's actually quite interesting that there are companies that are quite good at this. For instance, Booking.com, everyone knows Booking.com when you want to book a room in a hotel. And this is a Dutch-based company, and everything they do is hypothesis-based. So if you're on their website, you're either in the control group or you're in the experimental group. So they do A/B testing. And actually, they stole that from us, from the scientists, that to use it in their management. So it's of course it's a website and it's easy to do, but all the decisions they make, they first think, okay, can we make a hypothesis about this, and then they start A/B testing. So if it's not, if the question cannot be in an A/B test, they won't run it. And I think we can learn a lot from them. So, and I've been in touch with the director of data science there, and she's going to give some workshops at our institutions to actually to help the leadership and help the administrators to incorporate this way of thinking into their daily practice.
Well, Rudolf, I would hazard a guess that most orthopedic surgeons, including those of us in academics, don't have much interest outside of our field. And so my question for you is, what is it about you that would cause you to take a dean's position that's over all subspecialties? And I heard you say, including nursing.
Yeah.
Why would you, is it a curiosity you're born with, or did you learn that from a role model?
I think it's a combination. I'm always curious indeed. And well, if you've seen many hip replacements and many hip revisions and all, well, then you're comfortable with the hip revision, even the that's my specialty. So even the more complex hip revisions you're comfortable with. So I always need something that triggers my mind and make it a bit more complex. So you needs to be to keep the spark going in your life. And so if with new roles, so it's also an experiment. So I think I made the right decision. Mo and I chatted also about taking on another leadership role that was offered to me. And then it's making decisions with not all the information you have that's always available. I think then you should follow your instinct and follow what makes you tick. And curiosity makes me tick. Also being a bit obnoxious sometimes. And this is a role where I can be a bit obnoxious. So question everything and try to get people on board. That's cool.
So it sounds like pushing yourself outside your comfort zone is really energizing to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Some folks at our age, they tend to buy a Porsche or they are, they want to cycle mountains. I like to cycle mountains, but you need to do it on the mental thing, mental side of things too. Yeah.
There's a sentence about you that I found fascinating, and it must have been on a bio when someone was introducing you, and it says about Rudolf Poole, and it says, he's comfortable with imperfection, drawing on Stoic principles and reflective practice. He embraces the Dutch ship name, which is in English, called the never perfect, as a metaphor for leadership in medicine. Tell me about that.
Yes, you know, I cycle to work oftentimes, yes. And then I sometimes take the train to Amsterdam Central Station, and nearby the Central Station there's the historic ships museum, and there's a harbor with the historic ships, and there's one ship that's called Nooit Volmaakt, and that's it's never perfect. So if you're in the naval industry, you know that a boat is never perfect, because if you have a boat, you can, if you finish painting on the end, you can start painting on the front of the boat again. So it's never ending, and so you have to be comfortable with things that are not perfect. So the weather is never perfect if you go sailing. There's always an issue with the weather, or the wind is too strong, the wind is too weak, tidal currents are against you, or the tidal currents are with you. So I think this metaphor of sailing and this ship name is a good metaphor for navigating through life. And this the good thing with this boat is you have to look it up. It was used to ship little boats outside to the sea and during World War II. And then these little boats were in the hull of the ship, and they took out the little boats to let the young guys fled to England to join the army there to fight the Germans. So it was used to transport students and young guys to fight the Nazis. So I think it's a very nice way of thinking about life, fighting for the good cause.
Yeah, Mo, I would suggest that the motto never perfect really fits our golf games too.
yeah.
So true. So true. In fact, if you push for perfection, it only gets worse. It only gets
absolutely.
Worse. Right?
Yeah,
the enemy of good is better. Is that right?
So,
I wonder, Rudolf, also, just because I'm so much about you is about, reflection and trying to, as you moved in your leadership journey, both in orthopedics and broadly in medicine. Do you keep is there a daily habit? For example, do you journal? How do you insights, or do you have a personal vision statement? Like, what are some of the things that have helped you that might help others?
Yeah, so I got into Stoic philosophy. I read quite some books about that. And one of the things that is really helpful is journaling. And actually, I'm playing around with ChatGTP. You can make your own GTP. Mm-hmm. And I made a Stoic GTP combined with CBT. Mm-hmm. So because CBT was actually originated from the Stoics. And I used that to play around with, to see what thoughts you have and what feelings you have with these thoughts and what your reactions are and your behavior is. That's really helpful. And I got that from insight that Stoicism is interesting from a coach. We had a residence when I, back in the days when I was the resident director, the training director, we decided that the residents needed to have coaching. And then we said, well, if they have coaching, we need to have, as teachers, we need to have coaching too, to understand what they're going through so they can reflect on us with, and we understand what's happening with them. So, and that was really insightful that she gave me insights into the stoicism. Well, that really helped me a lot. So it was also a bit of anger management. I could be angry when I was a younger guy. I was could have been angry, some angry issues sometimes. But nowadays, I'm quite relaxed. It's really helpful. Yeah. So you should only worry about the things that are within your control, and not about the things that are without your control, outside your control. So if you think of that philosophy, it's also helpful with key performance indicators. Hospital administrators, they like key performance indicators. For instance, they want to, for a simple one, infection rate. So they want to reimburse you for a lower infection rate. So, but infection rate is for a big part outside of your control. Of course, you can do a lot of things about it. And it's also measured at the end of the year or the end of 4 months or so, and the information comes later. So what you can do is use it as a lagging KPI and a leading KPI. So you have outcome KPIs and process KPIs. So if you have changed the outcome KPI to a process KPI, you can actually do something about it. So you can have monthly infection meetings to see what can we do to bring down this infection. So, and then this lagging KPI or the outcome KPI can inform these meetings. And I think then you're in a process building and psychological safe environment where you can build on and not getting judged about your bad infection rates, for instance. So those are things that I'm working on.
Rudolf, you have contributed so much to the knowledge advancement in the field of orthopedics. So we have, obviously, many of our listeners are orthopedic surgeons. What would you say is your most proud contribution to the scientific literature in our field?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm really proud that I'm grateful also to Mo and the folks at McMaster that they taught me how to do clinical trials. And I see a lot of observational studies where causal inference claims are still made in. And so I think my greatest, where I'm the proudest at, is doing clinical trials, randomized controlled trials, and that they actually bring results. So, for instance, the ESCAPE trial we did, published in JAMA, it was the largest trial on arthroscopic meniscal meniscectomy compared to training, and it showed that training was as good as the surgery. So, and that really helped. Well, it was one of the many trials that were out there, and. But it really helped to change our practice. So it's really hard to get a surgery above 50 in the Netherlands for degenerative meniscal tear. And so that really changed practice. So I like to do studies that make impact. I actually tend to do less studies. I publish less, but I try to publish studies that have impact.
Yeah, you know, I was just going to say that you know you've hit the method. I think it's taken me some time to figure this out, but I'm preaching this everywhere I go now, which is don't confuse productivity with impact. And so, you know, writing lots of stuff doesn't necessarily lead to impact. It's thinking deeply about problems and then doing important studies that lead to impact. Now, you've talked about the ESCAPE trial having, you know, been published in a high impact journal and then ultimately leading to what looks like a you know pretty important change in practice. But Mark has been thinking about an issue and certainly got me also thinking about it is, well, the majority of trials that we do publish in our field don't lead to surgeons and physicians and healthcare providers changing practice.
Yeah.
And try to get to the core root of why that is.
I concur with you. It's and that's also a cool thing we're doing in the Netherlands right now, in this healthcare evaluation system we're running. So we try to make a co-creation. So if we apply for funding for a trial, first of all, we need to prioritize the research question. So I chaired this group of people that, including patients, healthcare insurance, and orthopedic surgeons, to prioritize the research questions, the evidence uncertainties, we draw them from literature and from guidelines where there's evidence uncertainty. And so we prioritize the research questions, and then you have one research question, and we apply for that. And then there starts a co-creation process. And in this co-creation process, patients are involved, surgeons are involved, the funding agency is involved, insurance companies are involved. So basically everyone who's a key stakeholder is involved. And then we try to do hybrid effectiveness implementation trials. So we start thinking about implementation right from the start, not just oftentimes we do just effectiveness trials, and we don't think about the implementation. And I think we can start doing thinking about implementation right from scratch. And so that's why we do these. We're also working on platform trials and stepped wedge trials, so we start implementing something, because we quite know a bit about the subject. So it's not that we're completely oblivious about what the outcome may be. So, and if you have a stepped wedge trial, you can see what the effect is of the intervention, or stopping the intervention. It's also a possibility. For instance, we are working on a trial now where patients are not longer follow-up following a total knee and total hip replacement. So usually they have to be followed for 1 year and then 10 years. And so in this trial, we are stopping this 1 year follow-up to see if the outcome is changing for these patients. So we do send them questionnaires to see how they're doing. But this is actually a de-implementation study, and we look at the effect if it's not affecting the outcome. So hybrid effectiveness implementation studies, that's the way to go, I think.
Yeah, and you mentioned a bunch of terms that I'm sure some people may not be familiar with. Can you speak a little bit to what you mean when you say a step wedge trial and or a platform trial? What do you mean that?
What we're doing now is doing a trial in one hospital that's not working. So you have to, because you don't get the number of patients, and you have to have a lot of patients, of course. So what we do now is we have departments of about, like, say, 10 hospitals, and then you start with one hospital stopping this 1 year follow-up. And then you randomize the next hospital who will stop. So you decide everyone wants to participate, of course, and the protocol is written, everything. And then you stop each hospital like in 3 months, and you have a washout period, and then another hospital also stops. And you randomize the hospitals as clusters, and not the individual patients, but the hospitals to see how the process of de-implementing this follow-up works.
Interesting. So, okay.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to these stepped wedge. So it's a step, and we make all the steps, and you still randomize, because if you have a randomized trial, of course, then you can have causal inference.
Right.
Yeah. I think that the term causal inference, we need to focus more on that. So no, that's the way to preach, I think.
You're absolutely right. You know, John Ioannidis, I think 2005 in PLOS, I think it was PLOS Medicine, published that very provocative title, you may remember, Why All Published Research Findings Are False. And, you know, he got lots of citations on that. And, you know, the argument, you know, he made it. He has, you know, conflicts of interest, small studies, very small studies, and hot topics where, you know, in COVID, for example, you know, because there was so little information, it was the thing everyone was thinking about. All kinds of studies were getting accepted very quickly across journals.
Yeah.
And then we started seeing some major retractions thereafter.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's about trying to figure out, how do we ultimately get to trustworthiness evidence that can actually have impact, meaning it's taken up, isn't it?
And if you look at research waste, I think the small studies, well, we are hypothesis generating, but I think we have plenty of hypotheses, so we don't need to generate more hypotheses. We need to answer these questions now. And I think with platform trials, so platform trial to explain is you start with one trial. For instance, we're working on hip arthroplasty. We just finalized the ReDAP study with that's comparing unipolar versus bipolar cups for to prevent dislocation in primary hip arthroplasty. So we just randomized 1,100 patients. So and the platform trial, so this trial stops now, but in the platform trial, it would continue to add an arm, for instance, with different head sizes, comparing 36 to 32 head size.
Yeah.
So you have the complete framework standing, so you don't have to stop the trial, but you just add an arm. And so you can add arms and stop arms, and then with Bayesian statistics, you probably need smaller sample sizes. And that's really helpful to, well, not to waste so much. It's like someone framed it like, if you don't build a stadium for one sports or one event, mm-hmm. and we're building stadiums for randomized trials now, that's just one trial or one event. So actually you have plenty of sports and it can be done in the stadium and it can be done for years. So we need to build stadiums for trials, and these are the platform trials.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I haven't heard that one used. That's a great one, because that's what you're trying to do, right? Rather than try to conduct one large infection trial, which is what we're trying to do, as you know, in our preventive program, 21,000 patients. But the truth of the matter is we should be trying to sort out infection and have a platform for prevention of infection, and then build all the, you know, all the different trials and methodologies. Yeah, totally makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And then we make impact. And it's about impact.
So I don't know, Mark, if you have a follow-up, but I have one final little quote I want to share with you on a Stoic, Seneca, moral letters. And I want you to hear this one out, Rudolph. And then also I want you to maybe just give me your reflection on what I'm going to say. And then we'll end with that, I think. So in Seneca, moral letters, he writes, "Show me that the good life doesn't consist in its length, but in its use. And that it is possible and in fact, entirely too common for a person who has lived a long life to have lived too little."
Yeah, absolutely. Completely true. Yeah.
So wouldn't you agree? I mean, trying to find a real meaning, and I think that's what you're trying to do, is find a real moral compass on which you act and trying to do as much as you possibly can towards having impact and measure that with, you know, all the things you're doing. So well, I can certainly speak for myself, and I'm pretty sure Mark is in agreement here that, you know, it's the work that you're doing. And that what you've been doing, you know, in the service of orthopedics, in the service of your community, the service of the world broadly, from the impact of your research and also from your leadership, I think we owe you a certain big thanks. And continue doing what you're doing, Rudolph. It seems to be working.
Thank you. It's all about collaboration as well. So without our collaboration, I wouldn't be nowhere. So and the field wouldn't be nowhere. So we need to collaborate. Thank you for having me.
It's great to chat with you, Rudolph.
Great. Thanks again.
Yeah.
Thank you.